And gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagmann Report for today, last day of July 2017. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it's coming out that she might be, or apparently is paying hush money to Imran Awan. The situation with the communist slash Islamic infiltration in Congress, although you as an audience knew about it long time ago. People, we've had guests on, George Webb, for example, and others talking about it. It's just really ramping up in the conservative media, but nonetheless, the bottom line, the dots between the Awan brothers, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Seth Rich homicide, as well as other things, are beginning to connect. The scope of the data breach is incalculable, I believe. And when it is determined by the proper investigative body, when it's determined that the breach has been extensive, I do believe you're going to see attributed to this infiltration the blood of a Navy SEAL and the blood of others on Awan's hands. This is my professional belief, and by extension, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and every single Democratic congressional staffer that employed these people. There's a lot to see here. There's a lot of there. There's a lot of fire to this. And of course, there's more, but there's more news. North Korea, of course, is in the news. And then, Joe, we have the situation with the White House, Scaramucci, leaving.
Yep, out as communications director.
Yep, that was a short stay.
Yeah, he really made some waves, got tons of attention, got everybody all hopped up, and then now he's gone. Leaving many people to ask what is going to happen next. Is this revolving door of communication directors going to continue to spin as fast as it has? And, you know, what was his function or purpose for being put in there? Was it only to try to out leakers and get rid of Priebus? Or, you know, was it his rant to the reporter as the reason for him being dismissed? I believe, if I read the articles correctly, that it was the recommendation of Kelly to Trump to get rid of Scaramucci.
Yes. Well, Scaramucci bragged internally, according to CBS News, and who can believe the fake news, that he would be answering to the president.
Right, directly.
The incoming chief of staff said, not so quickly here. And there was an alleged dust up. Now, regardless, there's more to that story, but what bothers me the most about this is the leak. How quickly things, if you go back to the original purpose or the original incident that caused Scaramucci to express himself in such a colorful manner. And I understand that. If you go back to that and you start going backwards, there's something very, to me, that's very troubling about that. And I'm not 100% certain, but I think I know the backstory to that. And it relates to, and I want people, if you have the time and desire, I did a special program on Saturday. My daily show. If you go to HagmannReport.com, click on it. I talked about the reason I brought this up is I talked about the true nature of what's happening. And what's happening is, it's nothing we haven't already said here. T- to kill the presidency, to marginalize the presidency, and perhaps ultimately to kill the president. And when I say kill, neutralize, whatever the word is, politically neutralize, or by any means necessary. I wouldn't put it past this bunch to do whatever is necessary to marginalize or to get Donald Trump out of the way. I just would not put it past, and I think that's a real objective, which is why this is so troubling to me. Bottom of this hour, Jack Posobiec, our, that's right, our, I claim them, we're claiming them, our political correspondent from D.C., is going to be checking in and giving us the his knowledge about what's going on with Scaramucci. And don't forget, he's been close leaks. To these people. Yeah, the leaks. So this is going to be good. And then from 8 to 10, folks, I've got a family commitment. Actually, can you believe that? At 8 o'clock. So I'm going to be leaving Steve Coyle and Pastor David Langford.
Wait, you're leaving too? That's my nap time. 8 to 10, that's when I... On Mondays, you know, I can't sleep at the desk here, I go lay on the couch.
Wait, you know what? You didn't crane it in.
But, maybe I forgot. We'll have to postpone the nap for a later time.
Yeah, and but folks,
Steve and Pastor Langford,
yeah.
For the first time in a while, we'll be on together from 8 to 10, and that's going to obviously
need this
be
so much, man. We need this so much.
A fantastic show, as always. They always bring the best out in each other, and it's we've done a number of spiritual shows with Steve and Pastor Langford for the last 5-6 years. We used to do the Sunday shows on a regular basis.
Yes. And I believe, you know what, Joe, I believe, I was thinking about that the other day, I believe that, remember the what was it, 5 or 6 Sundays?
5 Sundays in a row where we did the communion, and
yeah. I truly believe that Pastor Langford, Steve Quayle, heading up those shows, and this is my personal theological belief, I believe that that did it gathered the people, the listeners, it gathered us around in a very solemn manner to pray for Syria. And when I say pray for Syria, we prayed that we would not go toe to toe with Syria, with Russia, that is. And I think, I really believe that your prayers, because of that, not solely because of that, but because of that, I think it made a difference. I really do.
No, many people believe that it did. And, you know, that's what the Bible says you have to do when you pray, is that if two or more people, you know, seek the Lord and pray, that their prayers will be answered. And it is, it's always good when those spiritual shows are done. It brings a lot to the table, and, I think it was a big part of our show, and still will continue to be. Switching gears here, while we're getting into the news, an interesting development or series of developments out of Venezuela.
Oh, you've been covering that pretty heavily.
Yeah, not as much as we should be, but getting the gist of what's going on there. If you remember last week, at the end of last week, the State Department issued an alert to diplomats and family members that they should leave the country as soon as possible ahead of these elections that were upcoming. Well, the elections were held, and I have to find the stats I was looking at earlier. I have them in my other notebook, which I did not bring with me. But if I remember correctly off the top of my head, there was a large voter turnout despite what the press there was saying, and the president remained in power, but he is planning on to completely change their constitution. Maduro, I think, is his name. And we have already, what's that? Maduro. Thank you. And we already have, you know, violent protests in the streets. There was up to 12 that were killed in the protests so far. It looks like it's going to continue to descend into chaos there. The State Department and U.S. issued sanctions. U.S. slaps dictator Maduro with sanctions as the streets are barricaded, and the Attorney General of Venezuela will not even recognize the results of the election or the new assembly of people. And the U.S. Treasury here, it says, has issued sanctions against Venezuelan President Maduro, sanctioning the President of Venezuela, saying, calling him a dictator who disregards the will of the Venezuelan people. On Sunday, Venezuela voted to create a new legislative body that could rewrite the constitution, and is expected to be filled with Maduro's supporters. Now, what are these sanctions going to do on the already the country's in terrible shape in Venezuela. Inflation is anywhere between 700% and 1,400%.
Socialism.
It's been like this for... Right, they've run out of other people's money to steal.
That's right.
And redistribute. So for the last 6, 8, 12 months, people have been waiting in line up to 12 hours a day just to get the basic necessities from toilet paper to milk to eggs. And there have been a number of, what do you call them, rat lines set up to help bring food and other supplies in that have been shut down by the government. One example of this is there was, I'm not sure if it was a company or a group of individuals that had brought food and supplies about 80 miles offshore to the point where people were swimming or catching, you know, small rowboats to get out there to get the supplies, and the government actually shut it down when it found out about it. But the Treasury Secretary, Mnuchin, said those who participate in the illegitimate assembly could face future U.S. sanctions for their role in undermining the democratic process and institutions of Venezuela. Many people know Venezuela's main export is oil, and with the sanctions on the U.S., if they stop their ability to export the oil, what is that going to do to the citizens there? And what is the future of Venezuela going to look like? Are we going to start to see mass starvation and genocide through food shortages and military crisis? It seems to be in a tailspin to destruction. And many, McMaster said, what is happening in Venezuela is the end of the constitution for that country. And they say that the erosion of the democracy in the country has been accelerating by design, that according to H.R. McMaster. So, folks, keep your eyes on Venezuela, because you don't know how soon, if it can descend into complete chaos and civil war.
And this is why we urge everyone to prepare here. All members of our audience, to the best of their ability, please prepare. Because even if a situation like that could be temporary, even if that was the case, just imagine, needing food, not having it, and then relying on the government to get it to you. It's not going to happen. No one is coming to save you.
No, in that case, the government's, hindering things, stopping, supplies and other things from getting to people who need them, shutting down the people's ability to use the currency to buy food because they continue to devalue the currency through inflation and the printing of money. If anything, the government has made the situation, 10 times worse. And take that as an indicator of what exactly would happen in this country if we got to that point. It would just continue to make things worse.
That's right.
Did you see this story? This is what we opened with on the Hagmann Daily Show. Spiritual awakening underway at White House. Bible studies have been taking place in the White House with the top levels of the Trump cabinet for the first time in over 100 years, according to the article. That the spiritual awakening is underway at the White House. The most powerful people in America are gathering weekly to learn more about God's Word, and Trump's cabinet Bible study is making history. They've been called the most evangelical cabinet in history, men and women who don't mince words when it comes to where they stand on God and the Bible.
And I think any time you talk about God, the Bible, the Scripture is good. Please be careful of the man's... what would you call it? The polluting by man of God's word, right?
Right. You're talking about taking scriptures out of context.
Right, right. Because, think of Romans 13.
We don't have copies of the teachings. This is something that the members of the cabinet who are not there do get these printed out to follow along teachings that are ongoing.
I'd love to see those.
But even the pastor who's doing this says it's the best Bible study I've ever taught in my life. They're so teachable, they're so noble, and they are learned. It's a groundbreaking, since nobody thinks the formal Bible study among executive cabinet members has been done for at least 100 years.
Back to
America's
basics.
Top cop, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, also attends the meetings regularly.
And think about being grounded in that. Well, think about the integrity, and the morality that spirituality does create. And I'm talking about real spirituality, not the not this fake spirituality. And I happened to be flipping through channels. It was like 3:30 in the morning, and I saw this advertisement for this water. It's for free. You send away. The first time I ever saw this, the commercial began. Oh, I got a car, you know, without expecting it, or I got my promotion, I got this or that. You know, some fortune happened in there, in these people's lives, and they attributed it to this vial of water. And I don't know. It was on a Christian channel. Look, I don't know. I don't remember. Again, it was like 3 in the morning. I don't remember which channel or which Christian.
Wait. Are you saying they were selling?
They weren't selling it. They were giving it away.
Peter Popoff spring water?
That's it.
I've seen that commercial.
I bought.
You seen that, Eric? Oh, my goodness.
What was that about?
Look, this is what I don't get. Because if anybody's been up at 2, 3, 4 in the morning and you're watching TV, you're going to come across this commercial. It's a guy named Peter Popoff. He looks like he's 80 years old with dyed black hair. And he gives away this miracle spring water. Now, what's weird about it...
Did you drink it?
I don't know. What's weird about it is, one, he's giving it away, which is fine. So I'm wondering where is he making his money from. But what they make the commercial about is not about spiritual blessings or you know, miracles. It's about, oh, I ordered Peter Popoff's miracle spring water and anointed myself. And 3 days later, I got a check in the mail for $40,000. It's all about the money, which they're giving it away. I don't know where the guy makes his money from. Maybe they make you give a credit card and you get charged some fee when you order it. But yeah, Peter Popoff's miracle spring water. I think that's the most silliest thing ever.
I looked at Lady, the studio dog. We actually were in the, we came into the office really early. I think it was this morning or yesterday morning. Yesterday morning it was, going into Sunday morning. I looked at Lady, the studio dog, and she looked at me, and we were both like, huh? Anyway, yeah, but getting back to the basics of Bible study in the White House, I think it's so important, and how great is that? It's not, I do hope it's not, you know, the Chrislam coexist. Let's, you know, it's, I do hope it's well grounded scripture. Of course, I don't know, but, The other thing that we need to mention, there was a diver that was spotted off of Norfolk.
Yep, I read that Virginia there, and reported by the Navy actually.
Right, and the notes that I took on this, you know, ships on security alert, that is a huge deal. Now that doesn't happen without some basis of concern, actual basis of concern. Especially when they can only be on security alert for so long in practicality. All day long is difficult. You've got a limited number of people allowed to move around and are members of the team and such, you know. So this is a kind of a big deal, but here's what concerns me. Do you remember 10 years ago, 8 years ago, Newburgh, New York? Right off,
I remember Newburgh.
Okay,
the half of the city is broken down buildings.
Looked like Mosul.
It did,
right? Yeah, but the nuclear power plant right up the river. Okay, there was a diver. They actually found a dead diver up there. Remember that? Now we went up there, and we were shut down by DHS completely when we asked questions about what this diver was doing around the outtakes of the nuclear power plant, you know, where they flush out the...
Not to change the subject, remember they stopped and got some good chicken wings there?
No, I don't.
Right when we were coming into town?
Oh, okay. I remember. It was on the right-hand side as we were going into the road. Yeah,
it was a nice little chicken place. But anyway, I remember sitting at the... after we were done work, you know, we went down to... Because there's a highway... And then there's the town, and then there's the river.
Right.
So the town's between the highway and the river.
Right.
And when you get to the end of the town and you get to the river, you can see all the way down. And I remember seeing across the river the nuclear plant you're talking about.
Correct. And this is one thing I'm going to get my notes. I saved all, you know, we save our notes, and I saved my notes from that time. But I wanted to really kind of take a look at this, from recollection, I do know that we got shut down pretty quickly by asking, when we were asking questions about the identity of the diver and the reason, and but this has the same feel to it. I have a real concern over this, and what I'm talking about, in case people did not hear about this, in Norfolk, the Navy searched for a possible diver, now multiple sightings, trespassing in the waters or on the piers at the naval station Norfolk, and they're going to continue, the Navy's going to continue this search. Now, that's a lot of area, that's a lot of searching, and how, if you know the naval area there, there's blockades, in water blockades, protecting our naval assets and our shores. So, this is not somebody, whoops, I accidentally kind of, you know, gee, I had so, you know, my fins just took me right there. No, this was intentional. And this is why it's so concerning to me. So, NCIS, I believe, is investigating, as well as they deployed the explosive ordnance disposal team. Who knows? But pay attention to this. There's something in the works taking place. And I wanted to make sure we covered that. Remember, here in about 9 minutes at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Jack Posobiec talking about Scaramucci, as well as other issues in the White House, what's taking place. And I look at this, Joe and folks, I look at this as really being a situation that Donald Trump is being put into, he's being pushed into some pretty untenable situations where it's...
Well, I'll tell you what, this chaos in the White House doesn't look good for him.
No, and the optics, I believe, are part of it. If you can, I mean, think of it this way: do you want to do business with a company whose upper management or management isn't chaos? No. What would you think of a company whose management isn't chaos or is struggling with things like this? You would not think too highly. There's that marginalization process taking place. And this is, I believe this is one third, and I use that number specifically, one third of the objective. You've got the optics behind it. Then you've got the practical application of the, personnel movements, the problems there. And then the third, part of it is the actual, leak itself, the unauthorized communications that caused the other two thirds. So if you look at it that way, and I think what is taking place, the deep state, including the members of the destroyed Donald Trump media, are making their moves today, right now, to marginalize Donald Trump and everybody around him. And I think Mr. Scaramucci played right in, or was a big part of this. I think this, in retrospect, when we look back at the events, and I pray this is not the case, but when we look back at the events and say what happened to cause the marginalization, ultimate marginalization of Donald Trump, this, is going to be a big section. But it's going to be related to the leaks. But go ahead if you want to weigh in.
Well, no, and it'll be interesting to talk to Jack in the next segment to get his take on all this. What would you call it? Inside baseball, really. That is
right
going on inside this administration. And as far as having a, you know, would you want to do business with a company that's having all these upper management and other types of personnel changes? Well, you know, that depends. Always talked about
how it's framed. I mean, it depends on how it's... See, he resigned.
He resigned before he was even... He was not supposed to take office until August 15th was the day he was supposed to be sworn in officially. So really, he never even...
What's the word? Withdrew or resigned?
He sold his company. He sold his billion-dollar company, got divorced from his wife, and fired within 10 days. Divorced his wife because she didn't want him to take the job.
Well, okay. And WBEN out of Buffalo is reporting this. I know Tom Barley there personally, and I can vouch for the information coming in. I can vouch for this information. Scaramucci resigns at the White House, as White House Communications Director less than a week after hiring, but not taking the position. And, WBEN as well reports that, this comes the same day John Kelly was sworn in as Chief of Staff. Sources tell ABC Scaramucci resigned, asking to be redeployed to the Export-Import Bank as Chief Strategy Officer, which is more in line of what he was doing. But it goes back to, again, the leak itself and the people around the leak. But I would put my... I would not take CBS... their version of the report where he was escorted from the White House grounds as opposed to what WBEN is reporting via their inside sources that he actually went and said, look, I want to go over here because of the Flynn situation. That's true, but it's how they said it happened. We're going to be right back with our political correspondent, Washington, D.C. correspondent, Jack Posobiec. Stay right where you're at. Network break.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Week Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perata's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Thank you.
Welcome back, folks, to the Hagmann Report. You know, a guy I think a lot of, the author of Citizens for Trump, go ahead, grab a hold of his book, Citizens for Trump. It reads, it's a great read, let me tell you. The Inside Story of the People's Movement to Take Back America, Jack Posobiec, a guy I like to call our top political correspondent. That's right, I claimed him. He knows the inside story of what's taking place inside Washington. When the news broke today, I was talking to John and Joe, and we all said, look, the guy to get on and the guy to explain this is Jack Posobiec. So we owe him a debt of gratitude for making time out of his schedule and coming on. Jack Posobiec, Citizens for Trump. Thank you, sir, for coming on. What's going on, sir?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. You know, it's funny. So I actually just landed back in D.C. I was in Europe for about 2 weeks, went to Poland to visit family, and I thought, you know, today is going to be a nice, calm day, relaxing, first day back. But no, couldn't have any of that. It was full speed ahead, full speed running, and we learned very early this morning that that Mooch was going to be sent out at the behest of General Kelly, now the Chief of Staff to the President.
You know, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Does this, the optics behind this, how damaging is this to President Donald Trump?
Well, it's going to be, I think, tactically, in the short term, it's not going to appear very damaging, because I think most people are going to look at it by saying, you know what, it's Donald Trump. He fires people left and right. That's what he's known for. You know, anybody watching The Apprentice or whatever watched it is probably now thinking, wow, Trump is firing less and less people than he used to. But I do worry about the long-term strategic communications issue that the Trump team seems to have, because with Scaramucci, we definitely saw a step in the direction of engaging new media, of engaging social media influencers, engaging some top Trump supporters that are outside sort of the mainstream, obsolete media, if you will, and reaching out to those new young voices, those new, with extremely large followings, such as the Hagmann Report, such as myself, such as Mike Cernovich and others. And sure, now we're kind of seeing that turned back in on itself, and it remains to be seen what exactly is the plan for communications going forward.
Well, if you don't mind, and I know that, and folks, Jack Posobiec is our guest checking in for the next, for this segment, just off a plane from Europe, tired as heck, but what a trooper. But we're getting reports that he resigned as White House communications director, and he's asking to be redeployed at the Export-Import Bank as chief strategy officer, as opposed to what CBS is reporting, where he was escorted out of the West Wing, and because of, as you mentioned, John Kelly was same day John Kelly being sworn in as chief of staff, and this is over the reporting structure basis, or whatever you want to call it. What's true here? Did he resign? Or was there a yeah, you're fired kind of moment there?
I think it was a little of both. I think it was a situation where Kelly said, look, you know, I want to make myself known. I want to make a big move, a power move early on. And, you know, I want that to be towards Scaramucci. I actually, believe it or not, I don't even think I mentioned this to you guys before, but a lifetime ago when I was in the military, I actually served under General Kelly for just under a year when I was stationed in Southcom at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And let me tell you something. The guy's a four-star general in the Marine Corps, and you don't get to be a four-star general in the Marine Corps by stepping outside the chain of command, right? That's what he lives and breathes by. That's how he analyzes any situation. So to me, it seems like he was looking at Scaramucci not so much as somebody who made off-color remarks, number one, but because he did so outside of the chain of command and outside of command approval. And that's something that's going to be a little different in terms of style when it comes to General Kelly's way of dealing with government versus Scaramucci's way of dealing with communications. Now, where Kelly is going to be hard press now is to transform that good organization, that, you know, obviously very military style, towards public opinion, towards legislation, towards dealing with, you know, the backstabbing and the politicos that populate the White House. and populate Washington, D.C. This is a very different type of animal, a very different type of challenge than he's used to. Just as a case in point, sort of your soundbite, I guess you could say, is ordering a battalion to march into Ramadi is very, very different than shepherding a new policy through the battlefield of public opinion and through both houses of Congress.
No, you're exactly right. Jack, I'm going to ask you about Rince Priebus. This is a he was the head of the RNC. Do you believe Trump brought him in to try to unify the Republican Party to his administration in ways that we saw, you know, the other side of that with Never Trumpers and a lot of the Republicans refused to get behind Trump? Was Rince brought in because of his standing in the head of the RNC, or were there other reasons behind that? And do you think it was a good decision to let him go?
Yeah, no, I think that one of the big selling points for Rince was that he was the one who was supposed to say, hey, you know what, Mr. Trump, you're new to Washington, you're an outsider, you have the election, you have the electorate, but I know how to get things done in Washington. I was the chairman of the party, so I'll be able to get the party behind you when it comes to legislation. That was his whole sales pitch, essentially, for himself as chief of staff. However, that never quite materialized. We haven't seen legislation for the wall. We haven't seen legislation for health care. This vote, you know, this past week was obviously a huge failure for the Republican bill, where that you can't even get them on the same page to agree as to what exactly they want to replace Obamacare with. So it seems that Rince, in very typical Trump fashion, he usually gives someone the chance to fail and then fires them. So I think that's really where it came to at this point. Though my sources have told me that that a lot of Rince's stuff came down to the leaks, and that very early on, months ago, people like myself, people like Roger Stone and Chuck Johnson had pinpointed Rince as being chief of all leakers. Case in point, you never saw any stories leaked about Rince Priebus. You notice that there's always stories about General Flynn or Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Steve Bannon, even Ivanka at times. But there's never quite any story, negative or positive, leaked about Rince Priebus. Sean Spicer to a lesser extent as well. So why did that never happen? And so it's sort of a process of elimination. You can see where the leaks were coming from. And at that point, it was where Trump had decided, okay, he's going to wait for a lull in the news cycle, and then he's going to make one fell swoop and bring in a lot of changes from here to there. And that's essentially what we're seeing over the past 2 weeks.
All right. Maybe Rince wasn't that interesting to the media to begin with either. One of the things I often wondered about with all these leaks is why we didn't see different strategies used, such as disseminating different pieces of disinformation to different people to see which pieces of information filtered back out into the media. And maybe they did try that to some extent, but it didn't work out properly. Obviously,
that is what they tried with Martin Short, and not Martin Short, Martin Sharp, excuse me, and Katie Walsh, and that's very much what brought down. Brought them to leave the White House was that they used a very similar strategy to that. And I believe okay. that the, if you remember very, very early on, that there was a story regarding Trump, planning to use the National Guard and deploying the National Guard, mobilizing them to the border. Something that's complete farce, and yet the entire mainstream media was running with it. That was clearly something, that was used to design, to flush out one of these leakers, I think.
Got it. And yeah, I that's incredible to how they
could
report on that.
Could you imagine?
I mean, that's so far out there, but man, if there's anything to chuckle about today, that's it.
With the leakers, do you still suspect that there are a number of other leakers, at least one if not more, still in the inner circles of the White House?
Well, I do, because remember that most of the staff of the White House was hired by Rince Priebus and his initial hire, former John Boehner staffer Johnny DiStefano. So they placed all of the key staff within the White House, not necessarily this inner circle of advisors that we seem to tend to focus on, but the rank-and-file members, the aides, the people that are populating the executive office of the president across the street that come and go from the West Wing. So you're going to see a lot of those people still being loyal to Rince Priebus, still being loyal to the RNC, and where, as Scaramucci rightfully stated, there were people in the White House who thought it was their job to defend America from Donald Trump.
Okay. Hmm.
I think many still think that way, too.
Yeah. Now, I didn't get a chance before airtime to take a look at what you had retweeted about Mike Cernovich. I'm not sure how much you were able to watch either about the firing of Scaramucci. Pretty much in line with what you were saying as well?
I think so, and I had a chance to talk to Mike about it. You know, he used the word devastated. He saw Scaramucci as a huge step in towards that direction of 21st century communication, and now we're left with a situation where we don't know what the communication strategy is. We don't know if there's going to be that same connection with big social media influencers and big online personalities that Scaramucci was planning. This is something where, you know, you look at it and you say, who's more important? Does it seem like the New York Times or CNN is really on a trajectory of success and growth? Or does it seem like, just, you know, regardless of any names, does it seem like the internet and YouTube and social media are the new venues for communication and political discourse? And clearly it's going to be the internet. So why then was Sean Spicer and Ryan Priebus trying so hard to only talk to TV stations, only talk to that same legacy media? You know, I think that's something that Scaramucci got, and I really hope that whoever does step up to replace him also understands that.
Okay, are you okay with Huckabee Sanders? Are you okay with her in general, you think?
In general, I think she's okay, but I would like to see somebody more dynamic in that role. I'd like to see somebody who knows how to create news cycles. I'd like to see somebody who essentially knows how to go on offense with the media, with the news, with creating stories. That's something that Scaramucci, you know, like him or not, he knew how to create news. He knew how to create the news cycle, and he knew how to get these people essentially eating out of the palm of his hand. I haven't seen that same talent with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She seems to me to be a little bit more in the vein of Sean Spicer, where it's very defensive. Oh, I'm going to clarify that tweet. I'm going to clarify that remark, rather than simply going out and saying something on her own, going out and putting her own two cents in, where you saw that in the past it was more like a corporate communications kind of style.
Indeed. Okay. And I think that's a right on assessment. When you look at the Spicer mold and go from there, I think that assessment's right on. Now, I know, our time is limited here, but I gotta ask this question. You're certainly not letting any, moss grow under your feet here. You just got back from Europe. You're gonna be in my home state of Pennsylvania speaking this week, right? Our home state, speaking in Pennsylvania?
No, our home state, that's right. I'm going to be speaking up in Lehigh to the Lehigh 912 group, which, believe it or not, is still alive and kicking, one of the last of the Tea Party 912 groups that is still alive and kicking after 5-6 years after being founded. They still get about 200, 300 people out to their events. They've invited me as a guest speaker this Thursday, so I'm going to be up there. Remains to be seen whether or not the lovely and talented Tanya Fay will be with me, but I hope she will. And it's going to be great to at least get to spend another night back home under the great state of Pennsylvania.
Indeed. I tell you what, I'd love to come down and meet you face-to-face, shake your hand, Lehigh. I don't know. That's just, where is that? North of Philly, right? I should know this.
Yeah, that's towards Allentown.
Toward Allentown, that's right. That's right. I've driven through there, I think, not many times. But, okay, wow.
Kind of switching gears here, Jack. I know we only got about 10 minutes left. The John McCain coming back to the Senate and the lack of the Congress's ability to get anything done with the repeal or replacing of Obamacare. Do you think John McCain is just being an obstructionist? I saw your tweet the other day about you or somebody else overhearing McCain saying, let's see Trump try to make America great now, after he turned down the Obamacare repeal vote.
Yeah, and yucking it up with the Democrats. It kind of reminded me from that line from Moby Dick, you know, when Captain Ahab yells, from hell's heart I stab at thee, you know, to it just kind of seems like that. You're going to come back and have this great, you know, medical breakthrough and be able to come back to work, and that's great, and we love that, but why would he come back to do something like that, you know?
Yeah, you know, I thought of you as well when he did that. I thought of a couple of our other guests. it you know, when you see the videos, previous 2010, he's repeal and replace, man. He's on the bandwagon to get to destroy Obamacare, and he shows up last week.
2016. We found an ad of his from 2016. It's not even a year old. It's like 6 months old, saying right. that he is leading the fight to end Obamacare.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confused, man. I've got whiplash when it comes to that. When that guy,
and many people were worried about the congressional recess or summer break in August, about not getting anything done by then. What do you see them even? Is Obamacare going to have to collapse either by Trump defunding it or letting it go, or do you think these people will be able to come together and get something, at least a repeal, on the books?
Well, to first mention, respond to the first comment, you know, I'm starting with John McCain. I'm starting to get the impression that in 2008, John McCain voted for Barack Obama. I think we've all kind of understood that by now. And then secondly, I'm not sold on the fact that Trump has ever really supported any of these repeal bills. And here's my take on it. When Donald Trump supports something, anything, whether it be a building project, whether it be one of his legislative appeals, whether it be something on the stump, what's the first thing he does? He puts his name on it. He calls it Trump something or other, right? And we haven't seen him do that with any of these bills. You notice the way he talks about them. He says, well, I hope Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell will have success with their bill today. You know, he always kind of distances himself just a little bit, but distances himself from it. So this is the Republican bill, not this is the Trump bill. So part of me is wondering, is it not his idea, his, you know, strategy all along to sort of weaken and weaken and weaken the Republicans' hand by letting them get a chance to do it and knowing it's not going to pass, and then to come around and say, well, let's see if Donald Trump can come up with something, you know, as sort of a negotiation strategy. And when it comes down to it, Donald Trump, when it comes to deals, he's a predator. He's an absolute predator. This is where he's in. He's got his home court advantage. He's in his environment. So I could see with something as complex and as big as Obamacare, he knows that he can't make the first proposal, because if he does, they'll walk right over it. But if he waits until the other side's hand is a little bit weaker after suffering legislative defeat after legislative defeat, then he can come along and propose something, put his name on it, and suddenly he has a lot more leverage to get them all behind it.
Indeed. Okay. And that makes sense. That's why we have informally termed you our top political analyst, because it makes perfect sense. And by the way, Jack Posobiec, author of Citizens for Trump, folks, if you have not gotten the book Citizens for Trump: The Inside Story of the People's Movement for to Take Back America, grab your copy of that book. Best journal I've ever read about the inside strategy and movements, and I want to thank Jack for writing that. Thank you very much, guys. Man, I'll tell you something. It's a phenomenal book, and people are missing out. If you don't have it, you're missing out, and no one's paying us to say that. So that's coming right from the heart. But Jack, okay, here in a couple of minutes left, what's on your heart, your mind? What are you most concerned with? Whether it be Trump, I saw you make reference to North Korea. There's so many things. Where do we turn our attention at this point? Where are you turning your attention to?
You know what I like to do is I like to keep an eye on what the neocons are up to in Washington, D.C. And when I see foreign policy, there's a great piece in American Conservative today about how the never-Trumper Romney contingent is really in control of the State Department, has really gotten the Mitt Romney foreign policy team there at State Department. And I'm also hearing a lot of rumblings. I wrote a story up last week that the neocons are pushing to have Rex Tillerson be replaced with Nikki Haley. Now, I think it comes as no surprise to anybody that Rex Tillerson isn't exactly happy with his role. He doesn't like being, you know, sort of that second banana. He's been a consummate CEO for so many years of ExxonMobil, one of the most powerful companies in the world. And now he's, you know, sort of playing on the second bench to President Trump. That being said, if he were to be removed, I don't think that Nikki Haley would be someone who's really been part of the Trump movement or part of the America First movement. She's someone that's very solidly aligned with neoconservatives, and we've seen that from her pushing for very extreme measures in Syria. She actually said the Syria strikes were not enough when Donald Trump took that that effort against Assad with the accusations of chemical weapons. And she's made very, very belligerent statements when it comes to North Korea, talking about directly using American military force against North Korea rather than trying to use diplomacy, trying to put leverage on the Chinese. Of course, North Korea being a huge client state of the Chinese, clear avenues of leverage that could be pressed there. But instead of going to that, she wants to go straight for that military option. That smacks to me a lot of what we heard of Condoleezza Rice and the Bush years.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I pray it doesn't come to that. And your kind of instinct, what's your gut telling you on this? I mean, you've been around these people. What's your gut telling you on this? You think maybe that change might happen?
I think Tillerson will be on the way out. I could potentially see Jeff Sessions moving over to the Homeland Security, stepping in for Kelly. When it comes to Trump, I think he's all about rewriting rules and all about sort of having that chaos candidate. I actually spoke to somebody in the White House earlier today, and I said, hey, you guys, you know, worried about all these change-ups? And he said, Jack, I lived through, you know, three campaign managers and how many chiefs on the campaign. This is just Monday in Trump world.
And that, my friend, is why you write the great books. And I was going to say make the big bucks, but most assuredly write the great books. Because yeah.
Someday.
Hey, Jack, thank you so much for appearing. God bless you, my friend, and I'm glad you got back home safe, and have a great Thursday at the 9/12 event, Lehigh, Pennsylvania.
Yep, that's good. Thank you so
all
much,
right, brother. Thanks for agreeing to come on with us. You're always the best, and we really appreciate it, man. All right, God bless you, my friend.
Thanks, guys. God bless.
All right, man.
Have a good night.
Yeah. See, this is why. I mean, he knows where he knows these people, Joe. And
well, he's been involved in this since Trump was just a nominee in the Republican Party, and from there to getting the nomination, to winning the election, to seeing the transition and inauguration. He's somebody who has been working in the inner circles there since the beginning of this. So if anybody knows, he's going to know firsthand exactly what it is that's going on.
I was going to ask him what he thought the MSNBC would run with today and such, but you know, it doesn't really matter, because you know that they already have their script already. So really, bad optics, but as he said, just another Monday in Trump land.
In the there's one of the more recent polls out from Rasmussen saying that Trump's approval rating is only at 40%.
I saw that.
I don't believe those polls. And I mean, how can you believe any poll you read online after the barrage of crap we were fed during the last election cycle? Every single poll ever invented online had Hillary Clinton ahead 99.9%, you know, with a margin of error of, you know, 0.5%. That, you know, it was a lock. The election was a lock for her. She was going to win. Yeah. There's no way she could lose. And, you know, Trump couldn't, he never even had the support in the first place to run, let alone win. Well, every poll on the internet and otherwise was proven wrong. And it just shows you how they're manipulated. But when you get down to looking into what polls consist of, you know, who was asked the questions, what were their party affiliations, and, you know, what were their, you have to look at the metrics of the poll. You know, the classes, income level, the party affiliations, especially if it's a political question.
That's true.
And then you see how many versus, you know, if they're asking people, do you like Trump? And they're asking, you know, 7 out of 10 people are Democrats. You're going to have a skewed poll more so than if you ask, you know, each party affiliates individually or just as much, you know, 5 to 5.
But it's kind of like asking people, you know, that are walking into Planned Parenthood if they support
Of Planned Parenthood,
you get my drift. And by the way, I just want to say thank you, John Robertson, for getting a hold of Jack, and thank you, Jack. And folks, send Jack a tweet message or message on Twitter. Tell him you heard him on our show, and thank him for appearing with us. I mean, again, just off a plane from Europe, tired, dragging his butt. He's got a million things to do, and he said, yeah, I will come on. And his book, by the way, Citizens for Trump, fantastic read. And I'm not just saying that because, well, we don't get paid for saying that, but it's a fantastic read. Go ahead, Joe.
Just before we take a break and get to Pastor Langford and Steve Quayle, I don't know how many people saw this article from the Daily Caller. Betrayal. Left-wingers furious with Democrats' support for pro-life candidates. The Democratic Party is facing a revolt from the left after the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, said the party would back pro-life candidates in 2018. Representative Ray Lugin told The Hill that there will not be a litmus test for candidates on the subject of abortion. The comments come as Democrats attempt to rebuild a broken party that has tore up from the last state and local and national elections. The DCCC goes on to say, I'm afraid I'll be withholding support for the DCCC if this is true, saying the to those who are going to not support candidates because of their pro-life stand. And it goes on to say here, you know, what better strategy than to betray the base, their base, and reaffirm that women's rights are negotiable and disposable, reducing the rights of those with childbearing capacity to a mere matter of opinion is utterly unconscionable, declared the New Republic writer Rachel Cole, adding that the Democratic Party is in fact saying that there's no litmus test regarding their colleague's support of a basic bodily autonomy. Terrible. This is a betrayal of every woman who has ever supported the Democratic Party.
Betrayal,
this is
my
garbage.
Butt.
This is not women's reproductive health rights. It's just it's just murder. Outright murder of babies. Folks, we're going to be right back with Pastor David Langford and Steve Quill.
I'm passing the baton to Joe. He's going to handle Pastor Langford and Steve Quill because I've got a family commitment until tomorrow. God bless. Remember, send Jack Posobiec a tweet. I know we're running over on the network time, but oh well.
Joe, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available. Anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night, go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove, and an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.